Well, welcome everybody to another episode of the Iowa Gravel Series Podium Podcast. I'm your host, Chris McQueen, and as always, or at least often, I don't think we've ever actually had a bad guest, but we definitely have a great guest here for you today. It's Mitch Brecky. Mitch came in first at the Walk-On 100 this year, and like usual, I have not done a ton of research, but I happened to Google a few things about Mitch that we're going to get into and hopefully learn some things about really what it's like to recover from some hard things, but also just get to know him as probably a hard worker, because Mitch, you're also a corn and soybean farmer?
Yes, yeah. Pretty much since I've been old enough to walk and work, my dad said to me working on the farm, so... Yeah, I kind of grew up doing that and playing sports.
No better way to gain strength than working on a farm. Mitch, yeah. Where are you? Where do you call home?
Well, I live just north of Albert Lea, Minnesota. So like where I-90 and I-35 cross, I'm about 10 miles north of there.
Very cool. So let's start from the beginning. How did you get into cycling? What's your first cycling, riding a bike memories?
Oh man. When I was a little kid, I was riding my bike all over. I was riding on gravel roads on a little BMX bike when I was 5-6 years old, back and forth to my grandma and grandpa's a couple miles away. And then I actually did race a little bit of BMX in probably like 5th, 6th grade, 7th. Then I got more into wrestling and football and got pretty serious with wrestling. Wrestled a bit in college, and then I ballooned up and drank too much beer and ate too much pizza and decided to get in shape and started doing triathlons. Got pretty into that, and then realized I was way better at riding bike than swimming and running. So yeah, just kind of steered towards cycling. So
stuck with that. Yeah, no, I just interviewed another triathlete out of Minnesota as well recently. I think triathlons will always help people be a little bit better than just what they might be in one of those disciplines, whether it's swimming, running, or biking, because of all the cardiovascular and the using all of the different muscles and everything that works out. What kind of distance did you do in triathlon? How far did you go?
Oh, I started with a sprint and I did, I would say probably 4 years worth. I did all the distances. I did Ironman Wisconsin a couple times, probably 7.89, 70.3s. The year I actually had my accident, I'd qualified for the 70.3 World Championships when they were going to be in Chattanooga, Tennessee, but I didn't make it there.
Yeah, we're gonna have to dip into that. Take us back here a little bit. You were doing triathlons, and then you got in an accident. Tell us a little bit about that.
2013 to 17, I was super into triathlons, and then 2017, I started doing some road races and was having pretty good success with that. I was riding with like the group at like in Mankato, Minnesota, like the Nicollet Bike Shop and stuff. And a bunch of friends were into road racing. So I started doing that. And we were on a Tuesday night group ride and we were kind of rotating through, and I hit some sort of debris. And I, instead of wiping out everyone next to me, I overcorrected and went flying over my handlebars. We were probably going 25, 30 miles an hour. I went flying over my bars, over the yellow line, the same time a car was coming the other way, going about 45, 50. And I got drove over by both tires, and then something under the car caught kind of right under my butt cheek, upper thigh, and ripped a big chunk out of that. So I severed my femoral artery, almost bled out. Happened to be riding with an ex-Special Forces medic guy who was able to stopped the bleeding until the helicopter landed and the ambulances came and everything. But yeah, I broke pretty much all my ribs, my lower 8 vertebrae, collapsed lungs, collarbone, concussion. My femur came out of my hip socket for a long time. What else I had? While they were rebuilding my pelvis, they couldn't reset my femur back into my hip socket, so my legs ballooned up, so they had to do these 4 big fasciotomy cuts. So that's why I to this day, I still have foot drop. So my right ankle just kind of hangs down, but I was able to regain a bunch of muscle above the knee, but my lower right leg is just kind of along for the ride. But, then they were able to reconnect some muscle in my upper hamstring, like to my glute. So I got a really goofy looking right leg, but so I pedal with about 65-35 power split difference. And let's see, I had a colostomy bag for a year because I was basically almost ripped out my.
Yeah, your tuchus.
Tuchus, yep. I'm sure I forgot a bunch of stuff, but yeah. So I was in the ICU for a couple of weeks, and then in like a step down unit for 2 more weeks, and then I had 2 months in a nursing home because I was non-weight because they didn't even know like how much would come back, so they had to like lift me in and out of the bed and shower me at the nursing home and all that stuff. And yeah, I just kind of started physical therapy there, and moved back home with my parents for I don't know another 5 months, and then I moved back into my old house and kind of started riding again very slowly after that.
Wow. But, going all the way back to the actual accident, were you conscious through the hit or do you not, what do you first, like you remember going over the handlebars, and then what's the next memory that you have?
I don't even remember going over the handlebars really. I don't remember. Like, I remember like the ride. We were probably like 30, 40 miles in. We were having a good, hard, fast ride. And then I don't remember like the exact instance. And then I remember like I was in and out of surgery pretty much nonstop for like at least 10 days. So I don't remember that first, but I remember waking up like in the ICU. And I remember that I was on a lot of drugs and stuff. I think like I had some like hallucinations, you know, cause I was actually like on a bed with my hands strapped to the side of a bed going side to side to keep the fluid from building up in my lungs because I had chest tubes. And that was kind of scary to wake up to. But yeah. At the time too, it was just a lot of, you know, numbness. I couldn't really feel a whole lot. But
well, I mean, looking back like now, you know, because this was, you said 2017, so we're not quite 10 years out, but 8 years out or so. When you look back on that time, like what would you share with people? Like, this was actually the hardest thing with that experience and recovery.
I mean, it hurt a lot. I mean, the physical pain a lot. The hardest. Yeah. Just like, you know, when I was in the hospital nursing home, just not knowing if I'd ever really go back to living a normal life, able to, you know, I was single at the time too. So I didn't know I'd be living back with myself, but my parents they live a mile away. I farm with my dad. Like, they're I couldn't have had better support system with them.
Yeah. But, that was kind of my next question. Like, where did you find support? What was the thing that kind of helped you keep moving forward, you know,
And then I was lucky too, you know, I farm with my dad. So I was like, we have help, and I was able, and within the next year, I was able to, you know, get in the tractor and drive a tractor. But like to this day, I still have to drive a car with my left foot. But yeah, I can drive a 10-speed automatic or a 10-speed manual semi with one foot. So, honestly, the wanting to get back to riding a bike, I didn't, you know, not knowing what level or anything, but just I started pedaling on the trainer basically as soon as I could, and with my physical therapy and everything, I kind of progressed past what they could do for me, you know, like at the nursing home and the next level. So I kind of just did my own thing as soon as I was weight bearing. I would go to the pool and swim. And I mean, from when I wrestled a lot in high school and a little bit in college, and just kind of knowing how to do that, you know, flexibility, motion type stuff, it just kind of stuck with me. And
well, yeah, what kind of, like, what do you attribute to? Like, I mean, it sounds like you were in a rough spot. Like, what was it that you felt like kind of like motivated you, or what was driving you to continue to get back on the bike, go and do things? What was there something that
myself I just wanna compete.
That's where you wanted to be.
Do it, and yeah, I don't know. There's nobody told me to or that I had to. I want to. I don't know. Yeah. And same with all the physical recovery and, you know, all that stuff. It's, you got to do the work yourself. No one's gonna do it for you. You know, you have to do it if you want to get better. You know,
have you continued to do any triathlons and things, or is this, or have you mostly stayed to cycling? What kind of is your focus now?
Just totally cycling. Yeah. I can't run at all anymore. I still swim a bit in the winter time, just to do something else. But yeah, definitely running would not go well for me.
Yeah. The biomechanics, especially if it sounds like your foot is not really something that's going to keep you stable.
Yeah, like if I'm going to walk a long ways, I can put an AFO brace on, which kind of holds my foot straight. Because otherwise, my toes just drop and I trip on stuff. So, I lift my knee when I walk, you know. So, right away I started with a walker and then two canes and then one cane and then just kind of I wear the brace if I'm walking a bunch. But like if I'm sitting a bunch, it's kind of tight and it's still a lot numb. And honestly, I still have a lot of numbness and pain, especially if I'm like sitting, like if I'm moving around, I feel a lot better.
Oh, that's kind of a great motivator, isn't it? So my wife, she's a paraplegic. And so she's been in a wheelchair for over 20 years now. And one of the things that she struggles with is a bit of nerve pain. And the thing that she's incredibly active. She's raised 5 boys. She runs her own business and everything. And I mean, as terrible and as painful or as constant that nerve pain is, it's also in the some ways we talk about, and she'd tell you the same thing, a little bit of a blessing, because by going out and doing something else, it feels better. Well, it's not that the pain goes away, but it's just not the focus. Yep. And by being able to, you know, control and put our focus in something else, it's something like, you know, you really can be blessed sometimes by pain a little bit. I mean, obviously I'm not going to say that for everybody, but in some rare cases, we can be blessed by the pains that we have by finding ways around them to avoid those pains, to fill our life with the good things that we can have. You know, it can be a very weird blessing.
Yeah, no, to be honest, I'm more comfortable. My leg feels way better if I'm riding my bike 100 miles than if I'm standing in line for an hour at somewhere, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about cycling. So this year, was this the first time you'd ever been on the Iowa Gravel Series?
I did walk on 100 twice. So I did it this last year, and then can't remember if I did it the year before or 2 years ago. 25, and I did it in 23 or 24. I can't remember, but I was, I think I was like fifth or sixth place that other year. That's when Nate Kulbaum kicked everybody's butt that year.
Classic Nate Kulbaum. Yeah. He comes in and just sweeps up everything, and you either stay on his tail, and I think that's
on his tail. I was dropped.
Tell me a little bit about your racing season this year. Was this a big event for you? What was kind of your A event? I know at least one thing, because like I said, when I was Googling you, a few things came up, and one of them was Gravel National. So I definitely want to hit on that. But what were some of the other races that you did this year that you enjoyed?
Okay, let's see. Going back to, I did Sarum down in Des Moines area. That was a fun race.
For those that don't know, Sarum is a kind of the earliest gravel race for the season. It happens in February, and sometimes, actually, the last few years, it's been really, really pleasant. Yeah. You know, blessing, curse of global warming, but it's a local favorite because it's just been around forever. Yeah. I think it's 15, 16, 17 years now.
Yeah. That's a fun, that one's, I've done that a few times. Yeah, it's always fun, and met a lot of cool Iowa people just from doing that. Let's see. Then I went down to Mid-South, and that didn't happen.
what didn't happen at Mid-South? The fires.
Yeah.
That's right. This year.
Yeah. Went down with a bunch of friends. There was like, we had two groups of us that came down from, you know, southern Minnesota. And yeah, we went out for the ride the day, free ride the morning before. It was super windy and they said, oh, it's red flag warnings. And then we went to go pick up our packets and we didn't quite make it to the front of the packet pickup line. And they're like evacuated the expo and tents were flying and we helped hold down the Silka tent. And then, yeah, we went back to our hotel and just kind of had our stuff packed, ready to go. Some hotels were getting evacuated, but we were on the opposite side of town. So we weren't really close to any fires. So we actually left that morning and drove to Emporia and rode 100 miles there and stayed at a hotel in Kansas and we're home Sunday by noon. But
yeah, you're like, well, we'll just make our own sort of event or things like that. Yeah, that I'd forgotten. Yeah. I'd forgotten that the fires happened at Mid-South.
Yeah.
I mean, Mid-South, this is very geeky deep, like race director stuff, but it's exciting for me is that Mid-South just moved over to use Movement as their registration system, which is a system that we use and have been enjoying quite a bit. And so there's a little bit of like bit of validation on my part to see some of these big races move over to these other registration systems. Cause as much as Bike Reg has done a good thing for a lot of cycling stuff, thing hasn't changed in like almost a decade. And it's got some rough bits on it from a race director's side. So
yeah.
That's cool. So Mid-South, but didn't happen. What else?
And then, so I actually went to Huntsville, Alabama at the end of March to do the U.S. Paralympic Open time trial. And that's where I actually got classified. So there's paracycling, there's like all these different categories. Like, so C is for upright cycle, and that's a 1 through 5. 5 being the least impaired, 1 being the most. So I got classified as a 4, so a C4. But then they have like the hand cycles and then the blind, visually impaired tandem. And they also have trikes. But so I did nationals the year before, just as like they kind of give people like you send them your medical records and they have give you a temporary, so I was a 5. And then they like did the evaluation and decided I was a 4. So I did that. I won the 4s, but they had, the World Cup was in Belgium in May that year or last year. And I too busy with farm stuff and to even pursue that. And like the time standards, I wasn't sure if it's all super complicated for like the World Cup and World Champs and qualification processes. And it's constantly changing. And USA Cycling just took over U.S. Paracycling, so it's all kind of in motion right now. But the World Championships are actually going to be in Alabama this next year in 28. So going to kind of see what a guy has to do for that. But I don't.
Do you think you'll have to continue on with some? Will you have to requalify? You think by racing?
Yeah.
Yeah, so your 25 win isn't going to continue on into 2028 or anything. You're gonna have to keep racing and
And a lot of the guys that had previously been on the world champ teams and stuff, they weren't at the 25 one because some of them had the 24 was a big year with the Olympics, Paralympics and stuff. So this was kind of an off year, but it was fun to kind of actually get my certification part done. So I've been nationally classified, but I haven't been internationally classified yet. So a lot of hoops to jump through still, but.
Would you really, if timing worked out and of course racing being what it is, you know, you have to, you never know what's going to happen on race day, but this is something you're going to continue to pursue. You'd like to see yourself in a World Cup sort of environment racing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That's really cool. Looking back a little bit, does it surprise you if you thought about, you know, Mitch growing up on a farm with his BMX bike going down the gravel road and that someday, you know, he might be in a world-class race competing against some of the other folks that are, you know, equally as passionate about it? I mean, did you ever imagine that or was that maybe far from the possibilities?
No, but I've always been like, I get into something and I really dork out on it and kind of obsess. So Yes and no. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, let's dork out about a few other things. I always love to dork out about training, and I always love to dork out about the nutrition. So I'm curious, like, what's kind of your training pattern now? What are you currently like thinking about and learning as you continue on with your training and prepare for these other races that are hopefully in your future?
Well, like the last year and a half, I've been using like that Coach Cat AI coaching, and that had been working good. But I actually, the last couple of weeks, I just, one of my buddies who races professionally, Joe Gettle is his name. He's going to be coaching me to hopefully get my time trial and short road racing kick a little bit better to see what happens with some of this para cycling stuff. So I'm going to be in for a winter of a lot of intervals.
gotta love the intervals. I guess with your, you know, known imbalance in terms of power output and everything, what are you focusing on to try and like, you know, use what you have, strengthen what you need to, what's kind of your strategy going into that?
So far it's been a lot of core work, which I need to do. I'm lacking that. I've been lifting weights, but yeah, he said it's not necessarily like the one-legged pedaling drills and all that. Just said, just do your normal thing, and we're just going to make that stronger, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's still kind of learning what I've never worked with a coach, so it'll be fun to see what happens. But
yeah, I mean, in some ways, coaching is great if you can turn your brain off and just be like, my job is just to do whatever my coach tells me to do and do it as best as I can.
Yeah,
you know, I've been told. When I've been coached, that like the best times when my coach is the most happy with me is when I just act like an idiot, just be like, "Yes, sir." I was like, you just be dumb and be like, "Yep, yep, whatever you do, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it."
Yeah. I was gonna say, well, but one other thing. So yeah, but so back to racing last year. So yeah, I did that. That was in March, and then in June, I did a couple like local Minnesota gravel races, and I did Iowa Gravel Series, and then like the Minnesota State Road Race, and then I did. I went up to Fort Collins and did Foco Fondo long course, won the para category in that. Then I did Day Across Minnesota. Oh, and then I did Gravel Worlds 150, won the para category there. And then I did Gravel Nationals and won got my Stars and Stripes jersey for that. So yeah, I raced a lot last year, but
congratulations. Yeah, those are some big races. I mean, you had some separation between Gravel Worlds and Gravel Nationals. How were you feeling in coming to those? Because Gravel Worlds this year actually was, I think it was a little bit wet.
Yeah, there was a couple MMRs that were all mud, but so yeah, when I have to get off my bike and hike, I'm very, very slow. but it was like I was able to ride most of it, and that there was maybe half to three quarters of a mile. So yeah, I got lost the front group there, but otherwise, yeah, it was really windy that day too. So it was
weird tough, to have it wet and then windy.
Yep.
I heard the Gravel Nationals was great, that the weather was fantastic. Yeah. And it was this was in La Crosse, right?
Yeah. Look on the Minnesota side in La Crescent. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, yeah. Those roads are so good too. Kind of like walk on, Eric, you know? Same type of roads.
Yeah, because in that Driftless Hills region, this is one of those things where I'm like, yeah, come do the Iowa Gravel Series. It'll get you ready for all these other, you know, bigger names and things. We're not really trying to compete against those folks, but get you ready for them and hopefully, a good step in your training progressions.
Yeah.
Well, very cool. It sounds like you had a big year. So what does 2026 kind of look like? Do you have an A race that you're aiming for?
Hopefully seeing what it takes to possibly qualify for Para World Championships. Gravel Nationals for sure, because they're in Minnesota. Otherwise, yeah, I think in February I might try to go to Arizona and do the Valley of the Sun stage race with a time trial road race, see if I can survive a crit. I mean, I've done them, but I don't love them. I can't sprint. So
Crits are a whole other a whole other deal, but they will make you faster because you know, that's it's if you you keep doing them, you you know, it's pretty exhilarating. How was Dam day across Minnesota? Had you done that one before?
Yeah, this was my fourth time. It was super fun. Racing in the dark is a rush. We didn't have any tail, like 2 years then 24 we kind of had a tailwind all day, so like it was faster and easier, you know. I mean, the same effort was quite a bit a harder effort this year, was a slower time than the year before, but I think I was seventh there. I got the front group kind of, I was with the front group until about 150 miles and then I just came unglued.
Well, easy to do, because I mean, isn't the total a little over 250?
242 or three.
242. Yeah. To dork out on the other things that we like to dork out on, what are you doing in terms of nutrition versus like an event like Dam? Then you've got, you know, your Gravel Nationals and the Iowa Gravel Series, you know, that closer to that 100K, 100 mile distance. And then you've got these sprinting. What are you learning about nutrition as you switch between these shorter, medium, and long distances?
Pretty much whatever I'm doing, I'm just trying to take in out like 100 grams of carbs an hour between gels, and like I drink Martin or sometimes the Tailwind stuff, just kind of whatever, but usually that just the plain flavored Martin works pretty good for me.
What's your technique to keep it on the time, because it sounds like you're not just putting it in the bottles, like lots of people just, you know, stickle the carbs in the bottles, but you're using a gel. You might have a few and you cycle through.
Yeah, like if it's hot, like a lot of times for a long race, I'll do a pack and I'll put four packs of Martin in the pack. So I'll have like 350 grams of carbs in that. And then I'll have a bottle with electrolytes and then maybe one bottle of water for squirting on your face and swashing. And then still trying to take some gels with some caffeine once in a while too. And yeah, just pretty much eat as much as you can whenever you can. If you have to think about it, just eat.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, yeah, should I eat? Yes, I should eat. That's the answer. What's your caffeine tolerance with something like Dam, where you're riding through the night pretty much? Do you have to caffeinate heavily, or do you find that you don't need much to stay up through the night?
I mean, no. I start the race, you know, with like I had a Martin drink mix with the caffeine. Like I always drink a full bottle with like 80 grams of carbs like 15 minutes before my race starts, pretty much no matter what distance I'm doing. And then I'd say every couple hours I'd have a gel with like 100 milligrams of caffeine. I mean, nothing crazy. I think what's coffee, like 75 and a cup of coffee or something. So pretty much like having a cup of coffee every hour or two. I don't know.
Yeah, I had my my first effort a couple years ago to do kind of overnight. I knew I wasn't probably going to do all of Iowa Wind and Rock. I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah, I'm familiar with it. I've never done it, but yeah.
It's, I mean, if you do the full thing, it's 340 miles and you don't know where you're going because it's all going to be handed to you on cue cards ahead of time. And
yeah,
Sarah Cooper and Steve Fuller do a fantastic job of making sure that is an event that is both difficult and rewarding and well supported in a way that you feel like you're completely alone and you could die. it's a wonderful, beautiful mix. I'm a big fan. But I started out, I think I ended up with like almost 900 milligrams after I totaled it all up of caffeine. I'm like, I don't drink caffeine much at all.
Oh, yeah.
So it was quite a rush. I was very chatty on that ride. It's fun things. So as you're going into this next season and everything, what are you thinking about the most? What are you learning? What are the things that are still kind of like surprising you as you're continuing on this cycling career?
Oh man, I don't know. Oh, that's a good question. Just you know, learning what your body can do. You know, you can do a lot of things that are harder than you think you can do, if you know, if you're fueled up for it and you're mentally ready to do it. And yeah, just the bikes themselves and the gear just keeps getting better and faster, and wheels, tires, frames, drivetrains, all of it. I don't know. I love nerding out with that stuff too. But yeah,
do you find that most of your community is involved in, or like the people you hang out with the most are involved in cycling, or do you have,
no.
You know, a kind of like, there's like the cycling world and the farming world, and you're kind of like, yeah, this little sliver in the Venn diagram that kind of overlaps, yeah, the two. What do the people in your farming world think of when they say, oh, Mitch has a big race, I guess he's going to go do this and he's really good at it? Like,
yeah,
how do they react to that?
Yeah, they just think I'm crazy. You know, there's, oh, or anytime anyone sees anybody on a bike on a road around here, there's, oh, I saw you riding the other day. Half the time, you know, there's people in Albert Lea that go for rides and different people passing through. I saw you on the highway the other day. I was like, no, it wasn't me. But yeah, no,
you cyclists, you all look the same to me.
Yeah, but yeah, no, they just know it's what I'm up to. It keeps me out of trouble.
Oh, that's a good thing. Have you had any success converting some of your farming friends over to going out and riding with you, or is it still a hard sell?
Nah, there's like one or two buddies that have done a little bit of it, but no, not really.
I guess nobody really asks about on the flip side where you're like, hey, have you gotten any of your cycling buddies to go and buy a farm and start farming and working on things? I mean, we don't ask about that, do we?
No, not at all.
Do you feel like there's anything that like has made you uniquely, that's been uniquely like kind of insightful for you to be coming from like the world of agriculture and combining the world of cycling? Is there anything that you feel like has become a superpower because you have these two worlds that come together?
I mean, yeah, I guess just used to being out in the middle of nowhere with no one bothering you, not afraid of quiet, you know, just, but that's probably not good either, because I get in a really big city with people all around me and I kind of don't really know what, get uncomfortable with that, you know? So it's,
yeah.
Like, I don't know. Otherwise, yeah, like well, I'm with a group of, you know, people in a gravel race, you know, and you see tractors and all that stuff, you know, I'm usually know what they're doing or probably how they're going to react and that kind of a thing. But
it does kind of help out, especially here in the Midwest, you know,
yeah.
It has been fun to get to know. I did not grow up in the Midwest. And so for me, it's been a lot of fun to learn how to appropriately pass, appropriately approach, and you know, waving at the right time and in the right way, yep, to make it all clear that like, yeah, we're okay, you keep doing your thing, I'm gonna keep doing mine, we're gonna be fine, and, yep, and nothing's gonna be bad happening. But I will say, with some of those big tractors, when they came down the road the first few times, and you know, I was coming up on them, I wondered, oh my dear goodness, like, how do I keep from getting squashed by one of these things? The good news is they are not quiet. Like, you can't,
no,
can't really miss them at all.
No.
Mitch, I got there's one question that I always like to ask folks, and it's the magic wand question. And I know I didn't give you a lot of, you know, prep on this one or anything, but as you think about cycling and the world that you've in, you know, the fact that you've had to come from injury and come back, and as you get into the world of paracycling and working with all these different types of events, is there something that you kind of like in your heart of heart wish could just magically happen in the cycling world that you think would make it, you know, better or at least easier for you?
Well, it'd be nice to just be able to ride on any road anywhere and not have to worry about distracted drivers. I mean, that would be, I mean, gravel is much better. I mean, riding with a Garmin Varia, I mean, I always know if a car's coming behind me, and honestly, around where I live, I never even have close calls hardly. But you know, for people that live in bigger cities, it's a huge barrier for people getting out on the roads is distracted drivers on busy roads. And just bad drivers in general.
Yeah.
I don't know. It'd be cool if everyone could have a mountain out their back door too to go ride in the mountains. But
that would be nice. Yeah, I agree. I love the mountains. I'm usually having to figure out some way to get out there. Do you like, given a choice? I mean, it sounds like you do a lot of time trials. Given a choice, would you rather have a flat, fast course or a lot of climbs and
climbing? Yeah, climbing and descending.
Well,
like driftless, right? Like the driftless area. You know, like I'm not really built to do, 2,500 foot mountain climbs, but like the 500, 600, 700, 800 foot kind of punchier ones, that works pretty good for me.
Yeah. And it's fun. I mean, everything you go up, you get to come down. These things are usually a circle, you get everything back. Well, very cool. Well, so the plan, do you have any plans to come out and do another Iowa Gravel Series race with us?
Yeah. I always check the schedule between farming and I got a 1 and 3 year old little girls, and we try to go camping once in a while and doing this para racing. So I kind of just sign up within a week or two and I know what'll work, but I'm always willing to drive 2-3 hours if I can find a good race. So walk on is so much fun too. I love that race.
Oh, thank you. And we'll be back. It does have very good camping. So if you can make it back in June, I recommend the Waukon City park has some nice camping, and they've got like a splash pad and a pool and everything that kind of makes it fun. I don't know if your girls like to swim.
We're working on it.
We're working on it. Well, cool. Well, Mitch, this has been a fantastic opportunity to get to know you. Any last words of wisdom for our audience before we kind of sign off? Anything you'd want people to know?
Go ride your bike.
Amen. Amen, brother. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, have a fantastic night, and we'll look forward to racing with you soon.
All right, we'll see ya.